If you're a facilities manager at a warehouse and your HVAC system goes down, it can turn up the heat, literally. But don't sweat it. Grainger has you covered. Grainger offers over a million industrial-grade products for all your operations, including warehouse HVAC maintenance. And even better, they offer access to experts and fast delivery, so you and your warehouse can both keep your cool. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is Corolla Digital. Allison Rosen. This week on Allison Rosen is your new best friend, Dave Attell.
Are you so you're justifying doing stuff that you think might end your life soon?
Yes.
Is this a justification, or is it that you... Wait, is it that you... Did you just fall asleep?
No, that was me breathing. Go ahead, I'm listening. That's my listening sound.
Do you think you really don't want to live? Did you say, am I?
Or yeah, are you having a good time?
I am, are you?
Yeah, of course I am.
Okay,
I enjoy talking to you. So.
Thank you.
Okay.
Same.
I am. You wouldn't even give me the whole. You were like.
I was saving my words.
Same.
Well, anyway. I almost said ditto and I steered away because that's kind of a shitty thing.
Is that out?
I only say it as a joke.
Okay.
Anyway, and the thing is, I'm kind of intimidated by you. But let's
Why?
Get to that. Well, let me address that after I finish asking my labored question, which is, do you really not want to live that long, or is this just a justification for smoking?
A little of both. I guess everybody wants to live long, you know, as long as they can live exactly as they are when they say that.
Subscribe to Allison Rosen as your new best friend on iTunes, or go to AllisonRosen.com. Only from Corolla Digital.
Allison's your new best friend.
Now, it's time for this week's CarCast with your host, Adam Carolla, and moderator Matt DeAndrea.
Get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get it on. Mandate. Get it on. Welcome to yet another CarCast. I'm Adam Kroll. That's Matt, the moderator. DeAndrea.
How you doing? Beard's growing in.
Thank you.
Your beard, not mine.
Danny Trejo is here. So. Danny, you know from every movie made in the last...
15 years, 20
years. 18. 18 years. Maybe Machete. I don't know.
Heat.
Everything. Every Heat. Everything. Everything. Good to see you, Danny.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming.
Spy Kids.
My kids love it. Everybody loves Spy Kids. Uncle Machete.
So now, where'd you grow up? What's your story? I'm curious.
Let me see where I grew up. Right down the street, really. Pacoima, San Fernando.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
I was 13. Van Nuys Boulevard, cruising.
Now, did you go to Poly High? What high school?
I went to Polytechnic, North Hollywood, San Fernando, Van Nuys, and Monroe. All in the first half of the 10th grade. I didn't play well with others.
He was undecided.
I only went to two of those schools.
I didn't play well with others.
I went to North Hollywood High.
I love North Hollywood.
My Pee Wee football team was the Sun Valley Falcons.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
We played at Poly High. Yeah, We played San Fernando for a baseball championship, like I was in the 10th grade, and I think the last football game I played was at Monroe, the Monroe Vikings,
yeah.
I think they were.
Yeah.
Wow. So at least, what was the other school you went to?
North Hollywood, San Fernando.
Tigers.
Yeah, Tigers, and then Poly Parrots.
Yeah.
Monroe. And Van Nuys.
Van Nuys Wolves.
Yeah.
Right. We played Van Nuys. Every team we played, my football league, and you went to every single one of those schools.
What's really funny is that my nephew Gilbert, my cousin, little Gilbert, he played on the Sun Valley Falcons.
Oh, he was a Falcon?
Yeah. But, you know, later on, I mean, he's
sure.
In Penn right now. But
he's in the joint?
Yeah. You know,
no.
He should have stuck with football.
Yeah. So you were a troubled kid, acting out, getting in fights, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I did.
And they just keep moving you from school to school.
Yeah, you just get in a fight and they throw
The radius we're talking about there is about a 6.5-8 mile radius of schools, all in basically the same part of the San Fernando Valley that I grew up in. And North Hollywood, not too bad. And by the way, this is back, what years are we talking about here?
Well, I was supposed to graduate in 62, but...
Mm-hmm. But like Sun Valley is dicier now, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
At least it looks shittier now. I don't know if it is shittier now.
Back then it was dicey, just, but new.
You know, new dice. Yeah.
A lot more, you know, a lot more people there. You know, a lot more people all over.
There was just room in the San Fernando Valley. I mean, if you would go back in those days, if you drove out to Chatsworth, you just see vacant land.
Nothing,
and like, hey, it's Charles Manson and Tex Watson. How you doing, Watson? There you go. Hey, you got some new – oh, you picked up some new runaway stuff. Fuck, that's awesome. So you're getting in trouble. They're throwing you out of school. Eventually, what happens?
Drugs, robberies, typical, you know.
Mm-hmm. What, was it like typical, like broken family stuff?
No. Actually, I came from a pretty good family. My dad, hardworking. My mom, you know, housewife. And
how does it work then? I mean, how does it work where some kids are just like bad apples?
You said it.
You're just a bad apple. I mean,
I blame your friends, Danny. I blame your friends.
I blame my mom would blame my friends. You know, but
your dad was
around. I don't have no friends.
Your mom was around. I mean, they were providing everything.
You know, my dad was working guy. You know, mm-hmm. he was working. It's like the more overtime he could get, the better.
Right.
And my mom was, you know, busy with her stuff. You know, and I was just kind of like. You know, growing up, I had a role model that was an uncle, my dad's youngest brother, and he happened to be an armed robber drug addict. And I just, he always had a pocket full of money and appealed to me.
You gotta look up to someone.
Yeah.
So you start in on your life of crime, eventually get busted, you do some time in the joint. How old are you before you have your just first whiff of success in Hollywood?
About 40.
So it's like at age 39 and three 38. Quarters.
30. I got into the Hollywood in 1985, completely by accident.
Right. So you're basically sitting around in your mid to later 30s now. What are you doing for work Hollywood?
I was actually a drug counselor. I worked for a place right here in Glendale, Western Pacific Rehab. Mm-hmm. And I still work for them. I still do their public relations. And Mark, what's up, my boss.
And you were working as a recovering
counselor.
Addict.
Yeah.
You were working that and telling the story. Don't do what I did.
You know,
story.
Kind of, you know, counseling and helping people try to get jobs and doing what, you know, somebody coming out of the joint, the drug addict, is like, you know, you've been gone 8 years. It's pretty hard to fill out a job application. What did you do for these 8 years?
Right.
I was sleeping. I was taking a nap. It was on vacation.
So what did you end up doing though? How did you get into Hollywood then? What was the break?
In 1985, I got a call from one of the kids I was working with, and he said at 11 o'clock at night, he said, "Can you come down, hang out with me? Because there's a lot of blow on my job." You know, 85 was pretty heavy with cocaine and
on the set in 85.
I didn't know it was a set because he gave me a. addressed to the warehouse district downtown L.A. Well, Dog Street was over there by Alvera Street, which is warehouses. I thought he worked in a warehouse. I thought I was going to go over there. We're going to sit in the car, 12 o'clock at night, smoke some cigarettes, drink some coffee, and then he's going to go back in to his warehouse after break, and everybody's going to think we're gay. And
it,
and it wasn't. I walked onto the movie set of a movie called Runaway Train, John Voight, Eric Roberts. He was a P.A.,
I love that movie, by the way.
Oh, God. I just came back from Russia because the director was Andrei Kozielowski, who actually gave me my start.
On Runaway Train. Yeah, uh-huh. the cinematography on Runaway Train was unbelievable. It's a highly underrated movie.
Yeah.
Not underrated. No one thought it was bad. Yeah. It's not as popular as it should be.
Well,
Voight was amazing.
It was Voight a canon. It was a canon movie, and prison movies weren't real big in 85.
Right.
Know?
And Voight, it's funny because he's such a soft-spoken, nice guy and everything, but he played a crazy badass.
Yeah.
And
that was some of his best work.
Eric Roberts, both of them should have been nominated if they
weren't. They did. They were. They were both nominated. Eric was nominated for Best Supporting, and John was nominated for Best Actor.
There's a great piece of cinematography where the train is just going through a snow field. It's basically snow's covered the tracks, so it's just a high jib shot. Or a helicopter shot of a train that just looks like it's going. It doesn't look like it's on rails. Yeah. It just looks like it's just going through the snow.
Wow.
Really cool movie. So he sees you.
Yeah, what do?
No,
do you punch Eric Roberts in the face and be like, I need to be here.
Onto the set, and I thought it was the cutest thing I'd ever seen because all these guys were like acting like convicts. You know, and they were coming up to me going, hey, is this tough? I go, yeah, you should be somebody's wife in prison. Oh, you're all right. And they all had like tattoos that smeared. That's all I remember. I kept going, oh, shit, I'm sorry. I had tattoos smeared. And I'd never been on a movie set in my life.
Right.
This guy asked me, do you want to be in this movie? And I said, what do I got to do? He said, do you want to be an extra? And I said, extra what?
You know? And you got to be specific. You got to think of where I've been.
Can you act like a convict? And I'm thinking, let me see, San Quentin, Folsom, Soledad, Vacaville, Tracy. I said, I'll give it a shot.
Same number of high schools. You got a penitentiary for every high school you went to.
So, you know, I took off my shirt. I have that big tattoo on my chest. The tattoo says, this guy's been in prison. It doesn't look like the Marines or, you know, this is a tan needle and thread, right?
Right.
And, oh, God, I'm sorry. That's
very
professional, Dan. That's somebody that's saying, hey, I did that tattoo. No. He goes, wait a minute. He sees my tattoo and he goes like this.
Holds his hands up, makes a square, like does the lens thing.
I'm trying to figure out what stupid gang is that.
I thought he was giving me a gang sign.
It's Hollywood.
So I gave him a P for Pacoima, you know. and then all of a sudden this other guy comes over and says, you're Danny Trejo. And I go, yeah. And he said, Danny, I saw you win the lightweight and the welterweight title up at San Quentin. I go, you're Eddie Bunker. This guy was in prison with me.
So you were boxing in prison.
Oh, yeah. My uncle started me boxing when I was 8 years old. He was Golden Gloves. And I want to say I was his sparring partner. He was like 14. I was 8 years old. I was his punching bag. So
right.
I either had to learn how to duck or you know, get killed.
Right. Yeah. Now, did you ever want to be a professional boxer?
Well, when I came out of the joint, I signed up with Howie Steinler, who used to manage Indian Red Lopez and Danny Lopez.
Yeah.
Howie was cool, but we went to get a license, and I had too much violence on my – so they gave me probation. I was on probation, so I used to do little club fights and make some money.
Danny Little Red Lopez was a great, I don't know if he's lightweight, I'm guessing, or lightweight, or whatever.
Yeah.
Lighter weight fighter
from
this area from the 80s, 70s, 70s. Probably.
What weight, by the way, is lightweight? Like, what is
135 pounds.
That's on 35. It's light.
Yeah.
You'd be surprised. But now, those guys cut weight because they end up walking around 150 pounds or whatever it is.
I just seen Bobby Chacon. I did the Pacoima Christmas Day Parade.
There's a little red.
That's Little Red, yeah.
Yeah.
And his brother was Danny Red Lopez, Indian Red Lopez. Yeah. Bigger, because he was bigger. And his brother actually beat a Mexican fighter in Mexico, Mantequilla Napolis, for the title. But in Mexico, you would never win.
Right, sure, because they got rules about not having rules.
They have rules about white guys not winning.
So you couldn't get your boxing license because there's too much violence.
Oh, he's keeping you down.
Even when you're out, they're keeping you down. What do they call that? Oxymoron.
That's funny.
They denied me, so I was on probation for like 2 years, and I made a little money club fighting, and I couldn't, you know. So I ended up being a drug counselor.
Now you're on the set. They're doing Runaway Train, and they need guys because the whole thing is Voight, and I don't want to give it away, but it's been 25 years. I guess
somebody might have seen this already.
Yeah, they escaped from prison.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
You know,
there's a lot of prison scenes in it.
What I got hired as was Eddie Bunker, right, the guy that I was in the joint with. He says, Danny, what are you doing here? I said, I'm hanging out with this kid. He wants to stay clean. And he said, oh, yeah, we heard about you in the joint. You were, like, running this program and stuff. And then he said, you know, are you still boxing? And I go, well, I train, man. I'm 38 years old. He said, you know what? We need somebody to train one of the actors how to box. So he introduced me to Eric Roberts. They introduced me to Andre Kozlowski. Andre Kozlowski liked the way I looked. Mm-hmm. And with the tattoos. The guy that they had cast was also a very, like Eric, very pretty man. You know, mm-hmm. there were two pretty guys fighting in mm-hmm. the joint. Mm-hmm. Doesn't look good.
Right.
And so they had to get somebody that kind of just looked like me.
So now you're fighting in the movie.
So, no, yeah.
So if we watched a movie, because I haven't seen it in a few years, I'd see you fighting.
Yeah, I taught Eric Roth how to look, you know, kind of good, you know.
Yeah, it's hard.
So then how
I used to do that for a living, okay. too.
And then how do you capitalize on that? And well, we'll get into cars, I'm sure, at some point. But how do you go from that one to the next to the next to the next?
You know what?
Is it like years in between or
no,
what?
The stunt coordinator, he liked the way I listened to him. You know, because a lot of guys that come in and say, well, I know how to fight. You know, but movie fights are a lot different than a fight. And so he kind of showed me some stuff. So I went. And that's what I was doing with Eric. And he saw that I would listen. So he comes up and says, Danny, I have another show coming up in a couple of weeks. Would you like to? And all I knew was 320 a day. That was SAG.
Yeah. Right.
I said, well, give me 320 a day.
Oh, and free. Oh, yeah. Oh, by the way, free food, which was huge when you come from the Valley.
You know what's so funny? I had a three-year-old son, and I used to make these big sandwiches and literally steal sandwiches and a couple of bags of Coke, you know, and take them home. So one day I'm making these sandwiches on the set, and this little girl comes up and says, "Oh, Danny, you have a meal penalty." And I said, "No, this isn't all for me. I'm making this for some of the crew." I thought I was getting penalized.
Matt, you know what a meal penalty is?
No,
meal penalty. It's so fucked up because. I was the same way. I worked as an extra, a stand-in on a film.
For Danny Trejo.
Yeah. And when you come, because we have the same coloring.
Yeah.
When you come from where we come from and where most people come from, free food just in general. Because I used to eat off a lunch truck.
I'm still about free food. So
it's a huge deal. So it's free food, and it's free good food. And it's not only free food at lunchtime, it's all day. Yeah. You could graze all day. I used to fill my pockets with the snack bars and granola bars and apples and shit and walk out of there. But it's to make it even better, if you're supposed to break at noon and eat lunch, but you don't break until 12:30 because they're having trouble lighting the scene or whatever it is, you get a meal penalty.
Yeah,
so not only do you eat for free, but you get another $50 because they inconvenienced you by making you wait
within six hours.
Yeah. I used to hope for a meal penalty. I used to hope to be exposed to smoke. I'd be hope for overtime. I'd be hope for hazardous everything because they would keep tacking money onto your shit.
So you're sitting there, it's 12:29, one more minute, I get a sandwich and $50.
Yeah, it's like they have all of this.
I love it.
It's all this union shit that doesn't exist in the real world. And like, so when you come from that world, it's mind blowing. Like, you can't believe what's going on these sets. And then you're like, I don't want to go anywhere else. Yeah, this is the greatest thing ever.
Ever.
And they have way more people than they need. Like, if somebody wants to
That's why all the food is there.
Like, go get a van and bring it over there, got to get a Teamster. I could drive an automatic Ford van. Like, no, you cannot drive an automatic Ford van.
Not that one.
We need a guy who makes $100 an hour.
You will not work without a Teamster. I'll tell you how much right now.
So they're going to go get the van. So it's a whole bunch of that shit. And if you're tired of working like me and Danny, but you're hungry, it's a great place to go.
I just want to talk about this 350 a day because I kind of feel like we're getting
That was SAG. That was scale at
well, also if you're doing a stunt, if you're doing anything to do with the stunt, you get the bump.
Yeah, that's what they told me. The stunt coordinator. No, okay, now if you fall down, that's a bump. A stunt. I walked out in the ring. I tripped.
Right. Yeah.
Is that a bump?
Seriously, like if they fill the room up with smoke or something like that, you'll get another bump for breathing in fake smoke. So now you
take care of you.
Now
I love you. My love. My union.
Now you realize this is a good thing.
Yeah.
Right?
So I just kept working. Now for the first 5 years of my career, I never had a name. I was just like inmate number one.
Right.
On the inmate number one.
I want to be henchman four one day.
Oh, yeah, I was. Yeah, henchman or bad guy.
I want to die horribly.
But then at a certain point, somebody figures out, and you maybe
Charles
figure
Bronson.
Out.
Charles Bronson. Charles Bronson, Death Wish 4. I was Art Sanella.
Uh-huh. First you get name a name.
I ever had. I still got it at home.
And now you got a couple of lines,
that
right?
That was 5 years. That was five. And I remember, hey, don't I know you have my...
That so just says a line.
But I got to say to Charles Bronson, and that was like, whoa, this is like the guy.
Right. We're looking at you, by the way.
That's that Con Air.
Con Air.
Oh, Con Air was excellent.
Johnny 23. Hey, yeah. We got company. Yeah.
That was great. I'll tell you, I love Con Air.
Oh, God. That was the biggest test in testosterone you've ever. We had like 50 guys on that set, right? All Hollywood wanted to be bad guys. Yep. And if you would spit, everybody it'd be a contest.
Yeah, Danny and I were talking about
there
Con
is,
Air.
There it is. That's Charlie.
There you are. Yeah.
Danny and I were talking about Con Air before we came into the studio, and he was saying how Nicolas Cage would roll up in a fly car, and I think he rolled up by an Aston Martin at a time.
Aston Martin one time.
And of course, Danny's trying to jack the car from him.
I said, hey, let me use it. I got to go get cigarettes.
What year? Let's see. I'm trying mid-90s, early-90s, mid-90s. So he's got a DB7. I think a DB7.
Beautiful Aston.
Must have been a DB7.
Yeah.
But. You know, it's funny. I talked to Nick Cage about, because Nick Cage had a Miura SV that he sold. And you ever talk to guys about stuff and
not Nick Cage?
They don't think they act like you're not sure if they believe you or not. Like you ever like I've done that with people where I've like been interviewing them and I went, "You went to North Hollywood High? I went to North Hollywood High." And they went, "Okay." And you're like, oh, okay, do you not believe me? Or do you want to ask me for, like, throw out a teacher's name or something. But they go, like,
what proof do you have?
I said to him, Nick, you had a Miura SV I heard you sold recently. I have a couple of Miuras. I love that car. And he was like, yeah.
That's it. That's you shouldn't have said a couple mirrors.
He didn't say anything.
He was thinking, now these are rare. They're expensive. You don't have a couple.
No,
you don't know what you're talking about.
I think
about.
He's a weird dude. I think weird dudes don't know what to do with information that you give them.
Is like, he a weird dude, Danny? Is
he's all right. Nick's cool, man.
He wants Con Air,
you know,
too.
He's kind of by himself. You know, he's just...
I've seen some of his
a
cars
lot of
around.
Guys, though, yeah, man, a lot of guys kind of like march to the beat of their own band. You
yes.
know?
Yes,
especially like Hollywood,
band.
like stars, movie stars. They like they're kind of like on their own band.
But I mean, you got a 55 Chevy pickup truck out
62,
there?
52
Chevy pickup. If I said to you, I got a 52 Chevy pickup truck
we
out
talk.
There,
that's awesome.
You'd be like, "What do you got? You got a straight six or a small block, or what do you got? What do you got?" We talk. You wouldn't go like, "Yeah, all right."
Sure you do, buddy. Sure you do.
You wouldn't get all weird on me.
I love that little 52.
So well, we'll kick some tires in a second. But your story, your personal story, is just too damn interesting. I can't
Thank
help
you.
It. So then and. The idea of going coming from where you come from and then being the kind of, you know, thug number five and then getting into carrying a film like Machete, like being a lead actor, is that something you even dreamt about?
No, I could have stayed inmate number one all this time. I've been in it about 25 years now, but I could have been inmate number one, but you know, right with me. But slowly, the longer you stick around, the more stuff they give you. And Robert Rodriguez, when we did a movie called Desperado, and I think we were in a little town, Acuña, Mexico, and everybody kind of got around me.
Was that Antonio Banderas movie? Yeah, that was a good movie. Yeah.
They were asking me for autographs and stuff. They didn't really know Antonio. And Antonio was from Spain.
Right.
Yeah, and so, you know, Spaniards are cool, you know, but it's like we're in this little ghetto town of Mexico, in Mexico. Mm-hmm. So they're like they all like my Spanish better, you know, like guttural, you know, Spanglish and Orale Holmes. And so, you know, we're like, I'm signing autographs. And I remember Robert saying, these people think you're the star of the movie. I said, you mean I'm not? What are you talking about?
Now, that would have been like 93, 94, somewhere in there.
Yeah.
So at a certain point.
He started talking about Machete then. He said, I want you to do this movie for me. It's called Machete. And he had this whole thing going then. I was, great. So
I mean, almost 20 years.
Yeah.
I mean, it took, I don't know, 17 years after that, 18 years after that.
Yeah,
so
you should hurry up.
At a certain point, do you go, I got to take some acting classes?
You know what? I remember with Eddie Bunker, my partner, right, because he stayed my mentor, man, showed me kind of the ropes in movie business. And I remember saying, after about, I did about 40 movies, you know, I said, you think I should take some acting lessons? He goes, shut up. Don't rock the boat. Just keep doing what you're doing. You know? And then if you get any intelligence, you'll screw it up. You know what I mean?
So, you're like a guy who has a bad golf swing. But it works. Like you're shooting
That's
a good game.
Analogy.
You're shooting a very good game. And if you ever got with a real golf pro, he'd fuck
it.
You up.
Yeah, you're screwing it up.
He'd tell you because there's you just it works.
Yeah, I like that.
That
like
sounds
that.
Horrible, but you know what I'm saying.
You know, yeah.
Make everybody mad on the golf course. He's swinging wrong,
right? Yeah. But the ball's landing closest to the pin.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
There was that baseball pitcher that in the '80s he would throw and it was like an underhand
side,
throw.
Yeah, side
it was like
arm,
side
yeah.
underhand.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
they're like, you know, he does it. He does it great. Yeah. It's completely unconventional.
There's that way. I don't know if that's Quisenberry or something. Yeah. But there's guys who do that with football, throwing a ball, everything that requires a technique.
Yeah.
There's one guy who has a fucked up technique, but actually he's figured it out.
Yeah.
And if you have a fucked up technique, and this isn't even analogous because some people can act, some people can't act. All the coaching in the world isn't going to help. You have a personality. You have a look. You have a point of view, and that's where you bring. Is it – I think we're – I'm showing you the picture.
Yeah, that's you.
There you go.
Is that me? Am
Kansas
I acting
City Royals.
Well, I'm an actor.
Great mustache.
Yeah. Was that John Quisenberry? John Quisenberry. All right. But why try to – yeah, you wouldn't want to fuck with Danny. And by the way, Danny's pretty much playing a drunken, expanded, old version of himself, right? Like,
basically,
I mean, you're playing a scary, badass guy. Look, if you have to do something with an English accent, they'll give you a dialect
you
coach.
Know what? Listen, but you know what? When I walked into Robert's office, I'll never forget, I walked into his office to cast for Desperado, and he looked at me and said – you remind me of the bad guys in my high school. I said, oh, I am the bad guys in your high school. And it's really funny. It's like me and him, we've done like 10, 11 movies now. And we do have this little dialect going that he'll look at me. I'll know what he wants. I'll look at you. And sometimes he'll go, hey, say, Dan, stop acting. Okay. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I know what he means. You know what I mean? We just,
yeah.
So, you know, it works.
Well, listen, if you're casting a role and you want boxers, construction workers, or gangbangers, you can't do any better than the actual thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I started a deal called Renegang for a while. You know,
Renegang.
Had a bunch of guys with tattoos. Yeah.
Well, it's true. Like, I remember in the 70s growing up, you'd see the same bikers in every single movie. Mm-hmm. Fat guy with a beard, you know, skinny, scary guy with a tattoo. Like, they had the same, even on sitcoms and stuff,
and
it'd be the same.
Yeah, like
dudes.
Every TV show in the 70s and the 80s had, like, these four guys. Like four guys.
Right.
I mean, I've done like now 250 movies. It's really funny because you mentioned sitcoms. I would come home, you know, I'd go over to my mom's and I would say, Mom, I worked with Robert. I'd be all excited. I worked with Robert De Niro. You know, mm-hmm. And she, I know, mijo, but get a job. I mean, she didn't right. believe I had a job. You know?
Right.
I did four episodes of The Young and the Restless.
Mm-hmm.
I swear to God, I went over to my mom's.
Were you a doctor?
Michael, my God, you made it.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. You were
sat
the doctor.
In a bar and I was like, hey, we'll kill all of you. You made it, Michael. We saw you. It was like, that was her world. You know what
it's mean? Funny. Yeah,
forget De Niro.
It's funny what's official to your parents versus everyone else in society. Yeah. It's so sad.
That's great. What's official to your mom and dad? Yeah.
Yeah.
It makes a difference.
Yeah. He played Dr. Rex Dexter, by the way.
I played a bartender, and we were getting ready to kidnap one of the heroes here. I don't know.
But
there, Tortuga, that's a good one.
200 movies, 250 movies you think you have on your belt.
Something like that.
Yeah. It's interesting because, someone, in a weird way, if you're playing character roles, you can, A, do 10 movies a year versus one a year or two a year, I mean, if you're the lead in the movie, yeah. And a lot of these movies you weren't the lead in,
no.
obviously.
No, I just
so you go spend 2 days on one set,
exactly.
go to the yeah. next set, and in the course of a week, you've been in three movies.
And you know what's amazing yeah. is that you'll be sitting in a hotel by yourself in, you know, Bucharest somewhere, and you'll be watching this movie, and they're speaking Bucharest, and you, hey, I'm in this, and you'll like.
I mean, you must not. Like a black blues singer who doesn't know all of his kids' names, you must not be able to.
I have
you
got a clue.
You don't have a clue. You couldn't
clue.
Do no. 60 of the 250
I
you're
could
in.
Do 20 of them.
I love that about you.
I think I could do 20 of them.
I couldn't do.
But always a car guy.
I love them.
And
I did Death Race 3 and 2.
There you
and,
go.
Oh, God, man. We had so much fun on that set. You can absolutely not drive the cars. So the drivers on Death Race 2 and 3, that's the one right. I know, were amazing because you can't drive them. You can't see out of them. You
right.
can't, because they make them all this. And so they're doing 80 miles an hour in this thing they can't see. It's too heavy. It doesn't turn. And they turn it. You know, it's like amazing.
Sounds like another thing for Tanner Faust.
Yeah, and having
Tanner. Oh, no. There's a girl in this movie in 2 and 3. Tanner Phoenix. Go
That's
to hell.
Name?
Go to hell. Look out. Here she comes. Gorgeous. Beautiful. Miss South Africa.
Wow, where's we're looking
she?
At a picture
there
of her.
There she
now.
Is. Oh, God.
Yeah.
Can we have this
come
that every day? You
wow.
know what I mean? And she is the sweetest, just nicest thing in the world.
She but can she drive? That's
yeah,
the question.
She drove. Cool. Everybody crazy. You.
Cool accent. So now you got, and the good one, the thing about being a car guy and being a poor guy at the same time is it sucks because you can't get the cars you want, you can't get the parts you want, you can't get anything. Now
you make
a little money.
I think the lowriders, what they would do is they would get an old car out of a junkyard. You know, just something that wasn't too badly beat up. And we'd drag them out. I remember my first car, it was a 1950 Buick.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't too badly beat up. And we pulled it out and, you know, just lowered it and put a paint job on it and put pipes on it and put a loud sound system on it. And I remember back then they had a little woofer that you could put on top of your radio and it was wow wow wow. I would like
yeah.
just, wow wow wow. So every song had an echo, you know, and that was it, and you were cool.
It was like, you know, the other thing I'd see, that weird squirrel fan air conditioning thing that they put
on
in
the
window.
Oh yeah.
And but it was like some kind of swamp cooler for Mexicans.
It's actually a dry ice. It's you put
oh,
dry,
you
ice.
Put dry ice in
and
it?
Beer. Dry ice and beer. And,
right.
And it actually yeah. cools off.
Oh, but I didn't know you put dry ice
yeah,
in it.
The
I'm looking at
you put beer in
the,
it, so technically it's not an open container in the car.
Yeah. The actual I have a 1936 Dodge, a touring sedan.
So mm-hmm.
It's really kind of rare. There's only five of them registered. And what we did was in the bar, we put like a little swamp cooler that actually blows cold air through it for
right.
air conditioning because you don't want to really tack the. The engine, you know, with an air conditioning because it's a, you know,
you're robbing.
36 is a long, long time ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you don't want to pull off the crank is what you're
yeah,
saying.
Yeah, yeah.
And put that whole system in there. But now, if you have a vintage car, they have all sorts of cool vintage stereos that look right but are digital and everything. And then they have all the air conditioning systems that you can hide away and tuck under and all that kind of stuff. Somebody figured out, even with rims and steering wheels and shit like that, like people want modern shit. They want it to look like the old shit. So here's a way to make the air invisible. All right, let's go out and take a look at Danny's 52. Got a Chevy pickup. We'll talk a little more out there, and we'll go see Danny Trejo's car right after
CSI.
This. All right, so here it is. It's Danny Trejo's 52 step-side Chevy.
Yeah, right.
Small block, 350 in there. What did this thing come with originally? Like, what would it have left the factory with?
Six, flathead six.
So straight six,
yeah, straight
flathead,
six, yeah.
And it's called a 3100, so maybe it was a 3100 flathead six. I don't know.
I think the 3100, I don't know, is that's probably chassis. I don't know much about these like I do some of the older Fords, but This one you must have had for a while because it looks, I mean, I don't know if you just restored it old school or you've just restored it quite a while ago, but
we restored
a lot of the cool bits on it.
We've had it for about 10 years and we drive it. I mean, you know, we drive it. This we can take this to San Francisco right now if you want to.
Is this a little romantic getaway with Danny Trejo? Yeah, why not? Yeah. Is this a stock piece here?
Yeah, no.
This is too cool.
It's stock, but we had it chromed, but as you see, they had too much nickel in the chrome, so
yeah.
We have to take that off.
It's funny, but it ends up looking kind of cool.
Yeah, that's why we...
And there's a little patina on top of the radio. It's what you call crazed, like you were in high school, Danny.
Yeah.
All five of them.
And this thing looks like it's got some air put into it, because I'm seeing a receiver dryer over there. And I'm guessing an air conditioning pump over there. Uh-huh. And bench seat. Done.
The interior is actually out of a Bentley.
Really?
So somewhere... Adam, I know a lot of people say this has got Bentley interior, I mean it's the same guy.
No,
this is actually out of a Bentley.
Somewhere there's a Bentley running around, no interior. Friends of mine did it for me, so...
They got the leather cheap. They got the leather on a real deal.
So somewhere there's a Bentley running around with no interior.
Now, are the wheels look stock but split in the rear?
Yes, they're actually stock rims that are chrome.
But they're not even split in the rear because they look wider than
they are. They're wider. They're just deeper set.
Normally, it's a
thicker tire, more beefy because of the engine, but. You have to have weight in the back. If you take off in this thing real fast, the ass end will come forward.
Right, because it's there is nothing back there, really. Yeah. And the where's the fuel tank on this
behind
car?
The seat.
It's behind the seat.
Literally behind the seat, yeah. That sounds
give you
unsafe.
Something to smell while you're...
yeah.
We're actually going to bring that... A lot of people bring it and put it between the axle, put it here.
Right, put it in the back and tuck it underneath. Yeah. But basically... You got a lot of weight, and you want to get that weight back and over the rear tire.
When,
so
when you lose
scoot.
Traction, you know your gas tank is empty.
Right.
I love the old school effects. Like I said, the regular bumpers, the steel like dish wheels. You know the hubcap type wheel.
Sounds great.
The eyelids over the front over the front headlights.
Old school stuff.
Yeah, really. but it's not like I feel like some guys get these trucks and they go crazy with them and
they don't
go
use
too
the
far and they lose basically the essence of it.
I kind of like just the clean look because it still looks like a 52 Chevy pickup. A lot of times you get them and you just completely change them and they don't even look like you know, this still looks like a truck that boy they don't use it for work. I use it actually. We still pull furniture and stuff in it. You know?
Yeah, I'm moving soon, so come over.
Yeah, come over and help you.
Can you fire it up for us?
Let me
hear what it sounds like. That's it. So it's got probably a Holley. Oh, Weber?
Yeah.
It's got a Weber 4 barrel on it.
Oh, really?
I think it's a Weber.
Yes, Edenrock.
Oh, yeah, it is Weber.
Weber got together with Edelbrock. What? You got to.
You know,
so,
we had Christy, and I think she said they first worked with Weber when they first did their cars.
Right. All right.
And it does.
I would have.
You know,
I would have bet $100,000 so that would be a Holley 4 barrel.
No.
On there, I had no idea that it had.
Let me hear your horn.
Weber.
Oh, and if the police get too close, people move out of your way when you do that.
All right, so Danny Trejo, where do we want to give a plug for you, your organization?
Let me see. What are we doing now? We're doing we've got Death Race 3 coming out, and. Have Machete Kills coming out, and we have that's the Machete. That's one of the Machete cars right there.
The Cadillac.
The Cadillac 76.
Yeah, and you have a organization.
Well,
we
have Canine Compassion, which is a animal rescue, and then you know, right now we're starting to work with Saving the Children, which are a lot of doctors that go around and start
And what's your
operation?
How do we get a hold of you? Your Facebook page or Twitter?
Danny Trejo. What is it? What is
your face? Danny Trejo.
The official Danny Trejo. Yeah.
On Facebook, official Danny Trejo.
Yeah. Go ahead, hit us. So, hit us up.
And we'll have Danny back on, and we'll get him on the podcast as well, since he's
and we'll bring the other cars
in the neighborhood. We'll bring the other cars.
And we'll bring Tana Fina.
Yeah, you bring her down.
And please bring her down. Send her over. You have to bring her yourself.
Matter of fact, you stay home.
Yeah. So until next time, Zach McCroll for Danny Trejo, Matt the Motorator, DeAndrea saying, keep the air in the spare and the bag in the wheel.
Wow. Thank you.
Thanks, awesome. Matt.